Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From the Fifth Quarter Studio in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to the Coaching Youth Hoops Podcast.
They're playing basketball.
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 Here's our hosts, Steve Collins, and Bill Flitter.
That's a nice spectrum.
All right. Hello, coaches. Welcome back to another episode of Coaching Youth Hoops. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see we have... Well, let's put it this way. We don't have Steve today, so we got another handsome guy, Wayne Goldsmith, with us today. Wayne is, we're going to talk about, and I'm really curious to dig into this topic, 10-second coaching, how to coach today's kids. But before we get started and dive into that, let me introduce Wayne. Wayne has over 30 years of coaching coaches. The reason I'm excited to have Wayne on the podcast today is because we share some very similar traits in that we want to help coaches coach better and help the kids that we coach. Anyway, he has dedicated his life to doing that. He's a true coaching icon. So Wayne, welcome to the show. Appreciate you coming on today.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here, Coach. It's interesting, isn't it? When you go to the States, there's a unique thing that you guys do, which is call coaches coach. Mm. And so if I was in Australia or in England, it would be Wayne, very, very occasionally Mr. Goldsmith. But if I go to a coaching conference in the US, everybody goes, hey, coach. Hey, coach. Yeah. Hey, coach. So there's a show that, again, out of the United States called Robot Chicken, where they do a Star Wars episode and the Emperor is going up an escalator and all the stormtroopers are coming down and they're going, my lord, my lord, my lord. I had the same experience in New Orleans. I was going up an escalator and coming down the other way were a whole bunch of US swimming coaches and they went, hey, coach, coach, hey, coach, good to see you, coach. Hey, coach. It's the only place classic. In the world where really? Coaches call coaches coach. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful acknowledgement. That it's not just what we do,
a badge
it's
so of honor. So before we dive into the topic though, of 10-second coaching, I want to kind of understand why should the listeners keep on listening? What do you hope that you communicate today?
Well, I think coaches are an incredibly passionate bunch of people for whatever reason. And I tell coaches not to dig into it too deeply because it might be scary what it reveals. But we get out of bed and the first thing we do is, I wonder how many of those I should do this morning for Steve. I wonder how John's going to be when he turns up the workout today. Hey, last night, that was a really good set Tracy did. I think today, you don't think about yourself or sometimes even your family. I mean, I know I go to the movies and my kids will say, Dad, you're not even here because you're staring at the screen and you're trying to watch Arnold Schwarzenegger or something else that I love, but your brain's going 16/100s on what? Do it on that different time slot. No, that drill would your brain is constantly thinking about how do I help other people be all that they choose to be? And it's a wonderful vocation from that perspective. So what I would say, the reason to keep listening is that if you're a coach and you're wired that way, that I've spent the last 30 years trying to figure out how do I help coaches do that better? How do I help them build better connections, stronger relationships? How do I help them be more effective in helping athletes? And particularly now when we're not dealing with a different human being, we're still dealing with the same human beings that have been around for a long, long time. But the way they learn is different. The way they communicate, the way they want to be coached is different. And I think what you and I do has never been more important.
Yeah. Well, why do you care so much? And twofold questions, since you've been doing this for such a long time, why do you care? How did you get started? And who is your biggest influence to really launch what you're doing?
Yeah, good questions. I don't know. I don't know. When I ask why questions, and quite often I do a lot of mentoring of coaches and coaching groups. One of the first exercises we do is why, and then why. So it's a little bit, if people are interested, there's a book by Simon Sinek, which I'm sure everybody's read or heard about, The Power of Why. And in why, he argues that once you know why, everything else is easy. Everything else is pretty straightforward. So quite often with coaches, I'll ask them, why do you coach? And the first answer is very, very typical. Oh, because I love coaching. So then I'll ask them again. I say, why do you love coaching so much? Oh, well, because basketball is the best sport in the world. You build friendships, you build physical qualities. You learn to set goals and achieve them. It's when I'll say, yeah, but rowing tell me exactly the same.
Right.
Football tells me the same. Everyone tells me that their type of people are the best because we're very tribal in nature. Why is it important to you? Inevitably, it comes out with most coaches is they just care about other human beings. Now, whether that's come from mum and dad, whether it's come from a spiritual side or a person, I don't know. And I don't dig into it too much. I just say to coaches, if you love it because you want to help people be all that they choose to be because there's a drive in you to see people realize their potential, wherever that's coming from, it's one of the most wonderful gifts. I mean, the friend of mine got me to do some coaching of some year 12. So the final year of high school here is what we call year 12. And I do a leadership training program with these boys. And every week we talk about a leadership experience that they've had in the last week. And a few weeks ago, one of these young men stands up and he says, I've got a story I want to share with the group. And he said that the other day we're playing soccer and we got a free kick. And it was a long range free kick, but I knew one of the team could do it, could get the goal. And I went up to them and I said, I believe in you. You've got this. And I said, that's the best coaching I've ever seen anyone do because that's what it is.
Yeah.
That we're in a position where we can every day help kids to feel like someone believes in them, which we hope by extension leads to them believing in themselves. And that allows them to change the world or at least change their world. So for whatever reason, I'm sure a psychologist would tell me, Wayne, there's a hole in your life which you're trying to fill. Coaching and alcohol, probably. But whatever the real reason is, it's just something that I've always wanted to do. Could be, if I was being really analytical, I had a fairly serious accident when I was young. And at the time, I was hoping to play rugby league here. And because of the spinal damage, it didn't allow me to finish that part of my career or what I was hoping to do. Certainly an expectation that I had.
Yeah.
That I wanted to play that game. And when I was 15, I had the accident and life changed from there. And it could be that I'm still trying to plug that gap if we're being really analytical, that I wanted to do something, didn't get the opportunity, and my brain's gone, well, why don't you get off your backside and help other people? That could be at the root of it. Biggest influence, probably I'd have to say my dad, without any, you know, dad was, he left school at 14 and a half and did a trade when war came towards Australia. So we weren't involved in the war at all in Europe. Early on then, we got very heavily involved. And but it was still a long way away. Once the push from the north came down into Australia, the Japanese were pushing down. Dad was barely 18 and he volunteered to go to the war. And that changed his life significantly because he was a cyclist. He was just about to become a professional cyclist. But at the time, the thing to do was, as a young man, was to go and fight for your country. And he spent three years overseas fighting in the Second World War. So Dad was, he wasn't particularly educated. He wasn't certainly very academic, but he read everything. I mean, he's a guy from a very blue collar, very working class environment, which we were and still are. And there's no money in coaching, but the old man, Dad read everything, newspapers. He read Machiavelli. He read Voltaire. He read anything he could get his hands on by people like Lincoln, by Churchill. I mean, Dad read everything. So you'd be out for a walk with Dad and you'd get this left field quote from Voltaire or this quote from JFK, or you get a quote from Churchill or something that he'd read that had meant something to him. And the number of times his words and his voice come back, excuse me, into my head is That's quite awesome. Monumental.
Yeah.
In terms of coaching, we've got a coach called Bill Sweetenham, who's a very well-known swimming coach. And I learned probably more from him. He's in the character of people like Lombardi, and he's a hard-nosed, uncompromising, driven to succeed coach. But at the same time, I've never seen anyone who loves his athletes more. I've never seen anyone who cares so much about them as people. Yeah. And I think that's one of the defining qualities of the great ones, is they've got that burning drive to be exceptional, extraordinary. And yet it's all driven by, I refuse to allow this athlete to fail. I'm going to be tough and unrelenting on this senior athlete, not kid, but on these senior athletes, because I care about them so much, I will not allow them to fail because I know how important this is to them. And I think the great ones have got that balance at elite level of that real love and care with that unrelenting commitment to be the best. So that's probably a little bit of an overview.
Yeah, well, and I just have to ask, are you bringing up Vince Lombardi because you did your homework on me? Huge Packer fan. I grew up not too far from where the Packers played and watched Vince Lombardi as a very young child. Was always great coach. So yeah.
It's interesting that even though we're a long way away, the influence of US coaches, certainly people like him and Jackson and Boomer and so many of the great ones, that when we weren't writing a lot about coaching, that we were all scrambling to get books from US football and from US basketball, from baseball. We would just, you'd get whatever you could, because the perception was that the level and the standard of coaching in the United States was brilliant. I mean, one of the most influential figures in world swimming is a guy called Doc Councilman. And Councilman's book on swimming is one of the most influential texts right around the world, has been since the 1960s. So the influence of American coaches around the world, it has been considerable, I think, and continues to be.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to know. So let's dive into the topic, which is 10-second coaching. And you take that and run with it. Like, what do you mean by that? Define that first, and let's build that out a little bit for our listeners.
Well, you know, thanks. And the topic came about because I do a lot of work with professional football here. And what we notice in professional football, certainly what's very evident, is there's a sameness about it, and there has been for a long time. And what I mean by that is typically Monday morning, so we play on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Typically what happens on Monday morning, the team comes together and they have a meeting. And we're talking about men and women who have played professionally the week before or over the Friday, Saturday, Sunday period. Monday morning, they come in and they have a one-hour meeting debrief on what happened at the game. Then they do their one-on-one meetings with coaches, which are usually half an hour or so. Then they have a team meeting in the afternoon to plan for the next game. And that pattern is in all the professional codes, certainly that I work with here in New Zealand and in England. Now, spend a bit of time thinking about 18 to 23-year-old human beings. They don't learn that way. They learn by turning on their phone, mm-hmm. seeing a TikTok video and watching it for 20 seconds, 30 seconds at most, and then sharing it with their friends. And then their friends reshare it back to them. And then they make comments to each other about it. They don't do anything for an hour. They don't concentrate. It's got nothing to do with ADHD or ADD or any. Those things are there, but that's not the issue. The issue is that we as coaches are still communicating with them based on a playbook that's 20 years out of date. And then wondering why they're not getting it and making excuses for their learning along the lines of they're not paying attention. The young players today, you know, the young players don't listen. They don't focus. So what we've typically done is try to find ways of forcing them to listen for longer. I mean, great story of a company I was working with recently. They spent a lot of money developing resources for their staff, spent $50,000 to $60,000, and these videos went 8 to 12 minutes. Typically, their staff are aged 16 to 22. I said to them, how's it going? And they said, according to our usage information, nobody is finishing even the full 8 to 10 minutes of the video. And when we asked them about how much they've retained, it's minuscule. I said, okay, what are you going to do about it? And they said, oh, we're going to give them some cues to help them and encourage them to watch longer. I said, guys, you're not getting it. Nobody. And one of the best examples is, like a lot of people, I'm interested a little bit in US politics just to see what direction you guys go. And if you go on YouTube,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Online, and if you go to YouTube and you have a look at the number of views of those 1.5 to 2 minute clips. Mm,
they're shorts, yeah.
That there's millions of people on there. I guarantee if you add those clips up, the viewers of those numbers, those clips, it's way more than who's actually watching the shows that the clips came from. And that's the way we've gone. So, and I say to coaches, you're dealing with an environment where it's got to be short, it's got to be sharp, it's got to be relevant, it's got to be meaningful to the person involved. And holding a meeting for an hour with a psychologist coming in talking about mindfulness, that was great 20 years ago. Now, I've got to get my message across quickly. It's got to be personal, it's got to be relevant, it's got to be meaningful, and it's got to have something in it which is going to help me get better. So I was having this chat with a rugby coach friend of mine, Andy Friend, believe it or not, great name for a coach, Friend.
Yeah.
And having a chat with Andy, who's a professional rugby coach, and it was during COVID. And he said, Wayne, do you know what coaching is now? He said, it's not meetings. He said, it's not yelling at kids out on the, or professional players out on the field. He said, it's those moments when you pass each other in a hall and you go, hey, I was just watching your video. You know, when we cut left, I think if we went a little bit wider, we'd get a better result. What do you think? Yeah, coach, it's a good idea. I was thinking about it too, but hey, why don't we work on that after training? He said, that's what coaching is. It's those 10 to 30 second moments every day that you and your coaching staff put in place. It's the cumulative impact on the player group and on the culture of the organization that comes from that. And he said, "This you can't do that in a 30-minute lecture. Doesn't matter who you get in. I mean, typically, coaches will go, I need to talk to players about hydration. Let's get someone with a PhD in hydration and nutrition to come in and do a talk to the players. Usually, they're from a university. They're not brilliant at presenting information for players. They're good at writing papers. They'll do a whole bunch of background work about theories and principles, and then at the end they'll go, implications for basketball players. Those days are, I mean, that's again, it's 20, yeah. 20 years out of date. What they want is, I'm a big believer that players coach players. So what we've done here, and say if I've worked with a team here, I live in a very hot climate, similar to Florida, if you like. Mm-hmm. I live in a place where hydration's a huge issue for football players. Waste the time bringing in an academic to do a two-hour lecture on the importance of hydration for elite players. What we do is we spend a little bit of time teaching the leaders about hydration and the principles of hydration and how to influence other players. So you're then up with a really powerful education tool, mm-hmm. which is a senior player talking to a rookie saying, "Hey, man, I don't know about you, but I get really thirsty when I drive my car. I always have a bottle of water with me." And the behavior changes. You know, the end product, the end result of all coaching is changing behavior. The end result of leadership. Everything's about our capability to change actions. Because
Let's bring that down. Coach. Sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off. But I before we dive too deep into that, let's bring this down a few levels to practice. And let's talk about, since we focus on youth coaching and youth basketball, let's talk about practice. Oftentimes, I tell coaches, talk as if you're in a timeout. If you're instructing something, you have a timeout to explain something. So you got 30 seconds. Let's talk about practicality of what you were just saying, because I think you're right on. Definitely do not disagree with that. We're snackers now of information and content, So we, whatever we're consuming. So then kids, we know that, they're the TikTok generation. So how does that change our practice? So let's take a typical, and work with me here a little bit, and take an hour. You got an hour and a half, an hour to an hour and a half basketball practice. Okay. And I have, let's call it, sixth grade kids, right? So they're 10 to 12 years old, right? How is a practice structured for a coach?
Yeah. A few things I'd throw out is, one of the foundation principles, I think, for all coaches is kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So you got to feel that you're invested in them and not just delivering a practice, that you're there for them and with them. I say to coaches, you're not coaching players anymore. You're coaching with players. Really different, very simple one-word insertion.
Yeah, right.
I don't coach players. I coach with players. That changed your mindset towards that. So show you that you care and that you're invested in the practice and invested in their practice. Second thing is, we know that they love to do. Confidence comes from knowing. Knowing comes from doing. So they love to do. And if you're trying to build a group of players who are confident in the exhibition of their skills and the delivery of some form of outcome, they've got to feel confident they can do it. And they only become confident by doing. So making sure the practice is directed towards doing and not talking. If you've got to give feedback, 10 seconds is, I use 10 seconds, but if someone says, "Wayne, I heard you demonstrate that and you fall with 14 seconds. Well, obviously it's a principle and we get as close as we can. But the primary school teachers have been doing this for 150,000 years, if they've been around that long. They use a simple technique called sandwiching. They go, "Hey man, I love the way you took that shot. I've got an idea for you. What do you think would happen if you did that with your left foot?" "Oh, coach, I think that'd happen." "Hey, that's a great idea, but man, I love the shot." So I'm saying, I care about you and I recognize and appreciate what you've just done. I'm acknowledging that you have done something that I as a coach value. I think it's great. I'm going to give you an idea that I want you to own. I want you to take ownership and responsibility for and listen to what you think about it. And then I'm going to finish again with acknowledging, hey, I think what you've done is extraordinary. The teachers call it sandwiching, but it's a wonderful technique because, you know, I often say to coaches now, and typically for a swimming coach, for example, they write the workout on a whiteboard.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it up. And I say, guys, we're all led to believe that it's what's written on the whiteboard is the secret to success. It's not. The real secret to success is where a player looks at it, grabs the workout and makes it my workout.
Mm.
That they take ownership and responsibility for executing the work that you've prescribed to a standard that's going to help them realize their goals. That's the real art of what we do. That is the art of coaching. I just wrote a paper for someone. I said, it's not what's written. It's what's not written. It's not the lines of volume, intensity, frequency. It's the gaps and the spaces between the lines that defines a great coach. Anyone can write a training session. It's not that hard. Pick up your phone and go top training sessions for youth basketball. And there's millions of it. Some of it's rubbish. Some of it's probably pretty good. 20 years ago, the challenge was, how do I write a training session?
Yeah.
Because we tended to keep that information ourselves. Now, anyone can get anything, anytime, anywhere for free. Writing the workout in is the practice is not the issue. It's how do I build a partnership with the mm-hmm. athletes so that they take ownership and responsibility for the execution. Another way I talk about it, Bill, is I say when we write a workout, it's usually with the science of basketball. So we write it with a set of volume, intensity, frequency variables, which is largely scientific based. But every time we write a practice, we write the content of the workout with the underlying assumption the athletes will do the content with the intent with which it was written. Now, our intent when we wrote the workout was good skills, great focus, outstanding passing, good right. shooting, great foot position, great teamwork. We make those assumptions, which is why a lot of people write practices. Very few people are good coaches because they think the practice design, the practice volume, intensity, frequency is the thing that will lead them to be successful. It's like saying sitting in a car makes you a driver before you turn it on. It's right. such a small part of what we do. And I often challenge coaches. I say, guys, seriously, write a workout and then wipe it off completely and write a different one. It's probably the same or similar outcome to the first one because we're creatures of habit. You generally find you're doing the same stuff or close to the same stuff. The art is in inspiring the athletes to take ownership and responsibility for the execution of the work.
How do you do that specifically? So I don't, you know, if you want to use another example besides basketball, it's great. But okay, so I have a, let's say again, use the sixth grade analogy, and we're teaching them the Euro step. They don't know the Euro step. We got to put it in because we think it's going to help us win, right? The tactical piece. So, you know, I definitely hear all the things you're saying because like, totally, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid that, you know, the art, it's the art, you know, what makes a good coach. But I still got to get my tactics in so they know how to finish at the rim as an example, right? So how do you teach a new skill, keep it short, keep them engaged, keep, you know, do that, everything that you just said before, or a new stroke in case of, you know, swimmer, right?
Yeah, generally, if you're dealing with youth, you're not dealing with babies. If you're dealing with youth,
they've got most of the
puzzle anyway. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of ways that we can coach, which is prescriptive, autocratic. We can tell them exactly what we want and keep doing it until we get it right. Again, it's old coaching. Why do I say it's old coaching? Because they're not wired that way. They don't sit and listen to anyone doing anything repetitively in any part of their life. Have a look at the way high school teachers teach. They don't stand out the front doing the times tables. what they do is they pose problems and they get the students to come up with the realization of the way forward themselves, because problem solving, the part of the brain that's activated around problem solving, I have to take ownership. I'll give you a great example in sport is that in the old days in swimming, typically coaches would stand at the end of the pool and they'd see an error and they'd say, hey, that's a mistake. Do it again. And they do it again and do it again. I hate phrases like practice makes perfect. It's rubbish.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
And even perfect practice makes no. It's mm-hmm. where we are now. It's can they execute the skill at speed, under fatigue, under pressure, consistently in competition? Doesn't matter if they can execute a skill in a closed environment a million times over. Can they do it at speed, under fatigue, under emotional pressure, consistently in competition? I do a session on 7 steps to skill development, but that I say to coaches, in the old days, we would stand there and say, do it again, 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 because of the myth of biomechanical perfection. Biomechanical right. perfection is our myth. That I say to coaches, listen to your own voices. You will say to a player, I'm developing your technique. I'm developing your shot. I'm developing your pass. Skill in any sport, and I'm happy to stick with basketball, skill is like handwriting. Every player is different. Every technique is different. There's some fundamental principles that apply to everybody, but in the end, every player is different. Every technique in their execution will be different. I say it's like a classroom. If I have a group of 50 students and I stand up the front and I write the letter A, everybody in that group will do a circle and a line. But walk around the classroom, every handwriting is different. That's the way we are as human beings. So this myth of saying we're going to do it until everybody looks like Michael Jordan is just ridiculous. It's insane because it drives you. A friend of mine has got a phrase. He says, trying to have every kid with perfect technique is like trying to teach a pig to sing. You'll annoy the pig and frustrate yourself. Like, it's insane, but we go down that route.
Yeah, we certainly do, yeah.
But we want kids to take ownership and responsibility. So going back to the example, I say to coaches, look, the old days we go, do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again, because we had this myth of textbook perfection. The only kid who's textbook perfect is a kid whose pitch is in the textbook. Everybody else, it's like the handwriting example. What we tend to do now is to say to the kids, hey, really like the way you kicked. That looked great. Hey, I noticed, how many times did you breathe from there to there? Oh, 6 times, coach. Is there a faster way of doing that that's going to really work out for us at nationals? I could take a few less breaths there. That's a great idea. Why don't we do that? Same outcome. I got the end product of coaching is changing behavior. I got the athlete to change behavior, but instead of me forcing the change or insisting on the change, they've gone, I chose to change my behavior to make me better. That's where we're at. Any coaches who are still putting on practices and say, guys, we're going to do this 500 times until you get it right, and then wondering why they're not even improving skill, but they're losing players. That's why. They don't do anything repetitively. How many kids in that age range do you know that sit and watch an entire movie? How many of them sit and watch an entire ball game? How many of them sit and watch an entire bus? They don't. They watch the highlight reels on YouTube. It's a global thing. That my kids love football, love English football. They're passionate about it. They wear Liverpool football jumpers. They love it. But they watch the 6-minute highlight package the next day. They don't watch the 90 minutes of the game because that's not the way they're wired. They're the kids we're coaching. And if you honestly think that forcing them to do a skill 800 times to get it technically perfect, according to some biomechanical principle, is the way to go, it's delusional. It really doesn't work anymore and probably never did, to be honest.
Well, that's really interesting. Okay, I'm going to take that a step further. Okay, shooting. Shooting at basketball, very technical, right? And we do talk about biomechanics, you know, the way you hold your wrist, the way you bring the ball up to right, and the way you follow through, and you know, So versus, you know, like, oh, well, just continue shooting, pushing the ball up with two hands. Both go in, but doesn't one go in more efficiently than the other? Right. The right, yeah. You know, quote unquote, the right way, the way, you know, Stephen Curry might do it, or right versus the fifth grader who's pushing the ball up with two hands. So what do you say to that in those cases?
No, look, agree. And that's quite often coaches will say, oh, Wayne, what are you telling us? The kids should do anything. Of course not. There's some core principles that apply to in every sport.
Yeah.
So for example, a sport like swimming, keep your hands soft, keep your feet loose and relaxed. Relationship between your head and hip, really important. Keep head movements small because they disrupt the flow of water. Those principles apply to everybody, but handwriting. That there are no, you go and have a look at the Olympic gold medalists over the years in slow motion. There's a big difference between these two words, technique and style. Huge difference.
All right. Technique explain that.
Is those core principles of
keeping the head still, right?
Wrist movement, head movement. I talk about in most sports, it's the four H's: head, hands, hips, and heels. If your head's in the right place, if your hands are in the right place, if your hips in the right place, and your feet are in the right place, more or less, that's sports skill. Around that is your style. And the other thing, Bill, as you know, I can stand there next to a kid and say, man, you're a shooter. I was going to do an American accent then, which had been really offensive. It's funny how you slip into it from time to time. My wife says it. She says, you go to America, as soon as you hit the ground, you go, hey, guys. But that you might stand next to a player and say, we're going to do, the old Jordan exercise right around the ring, never going to miss a shot. And every shot's going, you're going to be here and it, you know, without offending your the accuracy of your technique watching there. But in a game, can they do it when they're tired? Can they do it fast? Can they do it when someone's trying to kill them? Well, not literally, but smash
them and
hit them and shoulder them. Can they do it in the last minute? So just getting the technique perfect is not enough, because how many times in a game, except for a free throw, do they get to execute the skill in what we would call perfect conditions? Great example. I was working professional football here. And in our game, which is, let's say, rugby, which is one of the things that the opposition will do is they'll punt, and someone's got to do in, you know, trying to convert it to American football. They'll wait for the ball, and they're going to catch it to receiver. So you kick receiver.
Yeah.
Now, this one guy in the team I was working with, the opposition punt, and he drops the ball. And if they fall on it, they can score a touchdown. That's the way our rules are. So they punted again later in the game. He dropped the ball, and they scored another try, we would say, or another touchdown. And it almost happened a third time. Now, the old coaching response to that would be, man, we're going to get you in practice, and we're going to put up 1,000 balls until you can catch it. Wonderful phrase I like, Bill, is it's no good coming up with a great solution to the wrong problem.
Right.
Yeah. Very important line for every coach to remember. It's no good coming up with a good solution to the wrong problem. This guy's a professional player. He can catch a ball or he wouldn't be there. That's not the problem. The problem was he couldn't do it under pressure at night with a wet ball while 300 or 420 kilogram guys are trying to kill him. So when we go to practice, there is no point putting up 500 kicks and making him catch the ball. What we did was he'd do some shuttle runs and then catch it. So we're bringing fatigue.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.